The next case on for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the Minnesota Racing Commission's approval of Aces, running Aces Casino, and the request to amend its plan of operation. Council, as you're getting situated, I'll ask you a couple of questions. Ordinarily, we have 15 minutes each of argument with 5 minutes additionally to the relator. In this case, we have briefing from two different respondents. Is there, will we have arguments from two or one respondent in this case?
Your Honor, we'll have arguments from both respondents. We've agreed ahead of time to split the
argument. Even split? All right. All right, so we will, the marshal will designate in the clock and the respondent's argument a division of equal time. Council, please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument, because we do keep track of the record audio of the argument only on the audio recording for the benefit of the public. The timing restrictions are indicated in the light and clock in the lectern, which you can raise or lower. There's a button right in front. You can raise or lower it to your heights for your convenience. Council, whenever you're ready to proceed, relator, you have the floor.
May it please the court. This appeal addresses the unlawful operation of electronic table games currently offered by Running Aces Card Club.
If you could state your name for the record.
Yes, sorry, Your Honor. Josh Peterson on behalf of the Shakopee, Midwaukon, and Sioux community.
Thank you.
In 2023, the Minnesota Racing Commission overstepped its authority by approving the amended plan of operation for Running Aces Card Club. This amended plan of operation contemplated the operation of video games of chance, namely video blackjack, video poker, and video baccarat. That decision was unlawful and violated Minnesota statutes.
Before you get into the heart of that substantive question, I'd like you to address the issue of standing. What is the Midwaukon Sioux's injury in fact in this case?
Your Honor, the injury here has three parts to it, I think, and we have standing for three reasons. First of all, the community has a legal right to operate video games of chance under its video games of chance compact with the state and under state law, Minnesota statutes, 299L.07. The card clubs do not. And in a competitive market like this, a tight market like this, where there is a card club that operates certain card games in a casino that's only 30 minutes or 40 minutes away, the addition of games at one of these places can and does impact whether or not customers come go.
Well, I have a question for you about that, but if you could go ahead and list the other two. You said there's three bases for standing.
Three bases. So one is competition. Two is the tribe's legal right to operate this game, and it's related to competition. They have a legal right to operate these types of video games of chance, and Running Aces does not, and we have the ability to defend that right when another entity like the card club tries to operate these games.
How is that not the same as the first issue?
It's related, Your Honor, I'll admit that.
Okay, what's the third?
The third is that the commission has conceded standing in this case, and that relates to MnSTAT section 10.65, which is the tribal consultation statute. And the court can look at that, and we put the language in our briefing, but essentially the agency consult with the community because it believed that it would have substantial direct effects. That's the language in the statute.
Okay, if I could focus you on the first two.
Sure.
For just a moment before you get into the substance further. Essentially, it sounds like what you're arguing is that there is a coincidental effective monopoly that the tribe has on certain types of gambling, and the injury is that there may be an erosion of income, of revenue. What's the basis for that? Why is that not just a speculative assertion of an injury that might occur?
So I wouldn't say it's a monopoly, because the community is not the only operator of a casino in the area. There are 11 federally recognized tribes with similar video games of chance tribal state compacts. As far as whether the injury is prospective, which is what we argue, it's prospective economic injury, and we'd say the bar for standing is low when it comes to administrative appeals.
Well, prospective injury, economic injury, usually you can identify a specific injury that's going to happen, an injury that will occur.
Absolutely.
In this case, you have, why isn't the potential injury only speculative? Why isn't it more than just an assumption that those who would use gaming at Running Aces would otherwise have gone to the same type of or similar devices at the tribe?
I'd say for two reasons. One is we operate the same games. So we operate these games, except we don't have a nominal dealer that was put in place to basically try to avoid the video games of chance statute. So we operate these same games. We operate them, however, under the video games of chance tribal state compact, because it's video blackjack, video poker, and video baccarat.
But why is it more than speculation to believe that Mittewakan Sioux will lose consumers to Running Aces simply because they provide the same or similar form of gambling?
I would say one, that's their proximity. The card club and the casino are located within about 20-25 minutes of the metro area. It's a tight competitive market. Running Aces concedes this point. It's on page 31 of their brief that they are competitors and that they are injured. Running Aces is simultaneously suing the community under the same theory that they are competitors and they have been injured. So again, they're arguing on one side here that we haven't been harmed, and on the other side they're saying, wait a second, we've been harmed because the community is operating games that we should get to operate.
In the commission proceedings, did you, your client, submit a written objection to the request for approval?
Yes, Your Honor, several. I believe for this one, it was two different letters. The first came from Chairman Anderson former Chairman Anderson now, in the middle of July. And he put in that letter that this will injure the tribe. That was his concern. I mean, that's why the community is objecting, right? The expansion of gaming at the card club and turning it into what Running Aces' goal is, into a full-fledged casino, is an injury, a threatened injury, and a very likely injury to the tribe in this case.
Could you help me understand the sort of the nature of the things? I'll call them things just to avoid any
absolutely
anybody's favorite legal conclusion. Mm-hmm. But I guess maybe my question is, what was the difference between the situation after the commission's October 2023 approval letter and before that? I mean, I think the effect of the approval letter was to allow Running Aces to add, I think, one dealer table and 11 player tables.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the tables that were added and the equipment that was on them, was it the same as equipment that pre-existed the October 2023 letter on some other tables? My understanding, but I'm not sure about this, is that Running Aces was operating three dealer tables and I think 33 player tables. Were those identical to the 1 and 11 that were added after the approval?
So I'm not sure that the record is going to be clear on this, but my understanding is that 11 new video games of chance, video player tables, whatever you want to call them, I realize that the parties disagree on what to call them, but 11 more were added. So it was 22. After October, it was 33. There used to be three dealer tables, then a new table with new felt. And I believe, if you look at the record, it's the first time the Racing Commission, the whole commission, approved the game of Baccarat to be played on these video player tables, or as we refer to them, electronic table games.
So what remedy would you like us to order as a result of all of your arguments? I mean, what's your ideal preferred remedy based on your arguments?
Our position is that the amended plan of operation in its entirety was approved again in October of 2023. That amended plan of operation contemplates the operation of video games of chance. So the approval should be reversed.
And then what is Running Aces allowed to do? If we were to grant the appellate relief you're requesting, what would Running Aces be allowed to do or not allowed to do?
They would not be allowed to operate electronic table games, which includes the video blackjack, the video poker.
Even those that pre-existed the October 2023 letter?
Yes.
So isn't that a fact? So this, now I'm getting to respondents. Both respondents, I think, make an argument that this appeal, based on a writ of cert, is challenging more than just the October 2023 letter. It's challenging prior decisions of the commission, and those challenges would be untimely. But that has some logic to me. Can you tell me why that argument is wrong?
I think it's a few things. One is, if this court decides that these electronic table games are video games of chance, well, that means that the other electronic table games that the amended plan of operation, or I guess it was amended before as well, but the one that pre-existed October 2023 would have also contemplated illegal, unlawful video games of chance. So the effect would be, okay, you can't operate these 11 new video games of chance, or if you count the dealer table, 12 of them. But by implication and effect, that means that these other games are also video games of chance. So the commission cannot approve a new amended plan of operation.
But why would
those...
that be within the scope of our review right now? Why wouldn't the result in our case, if you're correct on the legal questions you raise, simply a return to the status quo before the amendment?
I think two reasons. One is what I was talking about with the effect. I mean, if those
right,
games...
I understand that. Yep. Maybe a consequence you might argue later, mm-hmm. assuming the issue hasn't been waived, but why would this court, in a decision, eradicate everything that was in existence, or some of what was in existence before the amendment? Why isn't the scope of our review a narrow one, and the remedy that we would offer, if you're correct on the legal issues, only a narrow remedy?
I think the court can pen an opinion that goes broader because of the unpromulgated rule argument. So the respondents sort of fall into a trap here. They either...
Assume for the sake of argument, as you answer the question that I asked a moment ago, that we disagree with you on the unpromulgated rule argument.
If it's not an unpromulgated rule, I would say that look at the record, look at the letter from the Racing Commission, because what they did is they approved an amended plan of operation. That's the entirety of the plan of operation. And to me, that means they have to come back and submit a new plan of operation that does not contemplate the operation of these games. But, Your Honor, it could be that really it's a consequence issue. So you issue a decision, you say these are video games of chance, they're unlawful, they can't be operated, and then the Racing Commission and Running Aces have to deal with that, looking at the new plan of operation.
Why would there be a new plan of operation and not just the status quo plan of operation if what we're doing is to invalidate the approved amended plan?
Well, it gets even trickier because it was now amended again last week to add more of these electronic or different electronic table games, which again gets to our sort of unpromulgated rule argument, right? I mean, they just keep expanding and changing these games without making a new decision. The Racing Commission decided in 2017.
Right, but if what we did is we went back to the status quo, if we said, okay, the tribe's right, this amendment was inappropriate, so the amendment is now invalid.
Then I think what exists would be what existed before. And if that's the way that the court views it, it would be, I think, 22 tables.
Right, I'm just wondering why, as a matter of law, that's not how we are constrained.
I think because what was decided in October was that the entire amended plan of operation was approved. So that approved the document in its entirety. So the whole document has to be set aside.
Right.
And then they have to present a new one that doesn't contemplate these games. Otherwise, I mean, I guess there is a world where they just go back to their other plan of operation. I think that's one way the court could rule. I think that would have consequences, though.
And under that plan, they were entitled to 80 tables, correct?
Correct.
And a table could be three people, or it could be how many?
The table issue... they're limited to 80 tables by MnStat 240.30. And we get into this argument where the respondents essentially want to call these things anything but tables. And of course, if the court looks at the record, Running Aces called these things video player tables when they first requested approval back in 2017. These are video player tables. The player sits at them. It's the only interaction that they have with these video screens. They're equipped with cup holders. They're equipped with bill receivers. They print out your ticket once you're done, just like a video slot machine. And I think, Your Honor, the part of the issue here that we're having with defining what is a table and what is not is because these are video games of chance. How do you define a near slot machine to as a table or not a table? Well, you struggle because you have a giant video game sitting on top of a stand, and the player is sitting there playing it. And yeah, it looks like a table, it acts like a table, it's a table, but they want to say, well, it's not quite a table. You should only count the dealer table. You should also look at the record here. The only factual evidence on what is a table comes from the Noah Hirsch declaration submitted by the community. And he says in that declaration that tables in this context have either 7 players or for poker up to 10 players, but never do they look like this, where you've got a dealer table and 30, 40, 50, 60 feet away, you've got players playing these video games of chance. And we submit that violates the 80 table limit. In fact, it goes up to 111 tables.
Aren't they playing against the live dealer, though, when they do that?
They're not playing, I guess in blackjack, they're playing against the live dealer. I'm not sure poker you'd say that they're playing against so much as playing against a table, because it's just 5 cards over and over and over again, and then you go to your pay table. I want to address one more thing before my time runs out here on the opening, which is the continuing violation argument that we make in the brief. This gets to Judge Ross's questions. This is a continuing violation, and the law is clear, even in the administrative context, that when there is a continuing violation, we have the ability to make that challenge and that argument. And we're arguing these are video games of chance. They cannot operate them.
Judge Ross, may I follow up?
Sure, thanks.
Mr. Peterson, again, kind of a factual question, but I'm going to avoid the word table, I think, too, in this question. I'd call it a piece of furniture or whatever it is, but an item. But are there some locations at Running Aces where they have an ETG using interblock technology where the dealer and the players are sitting at the same piece of furniture?
No, Your Honor.
All of them are.
They're all separate. They're in little clusters now. It's like three or four clusters of blackjack, and then there's another cluster of baccarat where the players are maybe sitting near each other, but they don't have to interact with the dealer. In fact, I think the closest one is maybe 10 or 15 feet from a dealer.
So, in your view, does every player's chair is connected to a separate piece of furniture?
It is, Your Honor. That's factually accurate.
So, how many chairs are there?
There are 33 player table player chairs, and then there are 4 dealer tables with their own screens.
Well, now I'm talking about, I mean, your argument is that they're over the limit of 80, but based on your way of counting, what would that number be?
111 total. That's how many of these video games of chance are sitting there for folks to play.
Okay.
But that's for individual players that are connecting with one dealer.
But they're also playing 3 cards, 3 hands at a time. So I think what the court's kind of getting at is, well, wait a second, there's 7 players per table at a classic table. Well, this isn't a classic table. These guys are playing 3 hands at a time, 3 community hands at a time. So we start getting into really high numbers if we start only counting the amount of hands being played, because each dealer table with 11 player tables, that's 33 hands that can be played at a single time, at least on the blackjack.
Is that legally relevant? Are you making an argument about that the number of hands converts it from something lawful to unlawful?
I think there is a way that the court can look at the table issue and decide, well, a typical blackjack table,
single piece of furniture might be 3 tables in your view?
Right. Well, it's functioning because, again, we're in the video games of chance world. It's functioning as 3 hands. So maybe, you know, for every 3 tables, you've got 7 hands, a typical amount of hands at a table. There are just different ways to sort of slice and dice the table issue. Our argument, though, is that each one of these video games of chance, each one of these electronic tables is a player table.
Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent, who is going first?
That would be me, Your Honor.
I was referring, which party?
I'm representing the Minnesota Racing Commission.
All right. Thank you. The clock has been set. Whenever you're ready to begin.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ryan Pesch, and I represent the Minnesota Racing Commission, one of the respondents in this case. The Racing Commission and respondent running ACES are splitting oral argument time today, so I propose a division of labor. Of course, any questions that you ask, I will answer to the best of my ability, but as a tentative guideline, we'd propose that I address the commission's decision-making process while Mr. Nelson fields questions regarding the practical boots-on-the-ground sort of aspects of...
Why hasn't the commission conceded standing?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure that the commission can concede that there's been a redressable harm or that a party has suffered an injury in fact. I think standing is properly raised here in the briefing. And I also don't think that...
Well, the commission seemed to believe that the Mittawakaton Sioux community had a stake in this by inviting their participation throughout the process. Why isn't that a concession that... A concession of standing. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of standing for, or a lot of proof of injury for standing on appeal.
I understand, and I think the reason the commission didn't concede standing here is that the idea that a party is interested or has that sort of concern with what the commission is doing doesn't confer standing by itself.
Well, there's been an argument made in the reply brief challenging the argument that there's no standing. And what's your legal argument in response to the concession argument that the community asserts?
Well, I think the legal argument that they posited in the briefing was that the standing that was conceded as a part of this consultation requirement. And that the commission's desire to receive more input from the community in this case somehow means that they were agreeing or stipulating that the community would be an affected party under the terms of the applicable statute.
And what is the legal argument, including case law support, that would refute that position?
I found this court's opinion in the Mesabi Cleveland Cliffs land development case particularly helpful when kind of parsing this standing requirement. And there the court said that mere participation in an agency proceeding or interest in the problem is insufficient to confer standing, citing In re Pappas, Minnesota Supreme Court case. So I would direct this court back to those legal principles for the idea that the commission's decision to involve someone and to consider someone's viewpoint doesn't necessarily mean that the commission is stipulating or agreeing that party would be harmed. It's simply doing its job as a thorough decision maker in trying to assess how the different ramifications of its decision.
Counsel, did the commission invite the community's involvement in the 2017 decisions?
I don't believe that the record discloses whether the commission invited their participation, but I believe it does show that the community at least was aware of the floor plan amendment, but I don't believe that was very thoroughly developed in the record here because, as I said in my briefing, the commission's perspective on this case is that it's straightforward. They were presented with an amended floor plan that added technology that was pre-existing, and it approved the floor plan because it didn't break any new ground. It simply added to what was already on the floor. And the decision to add one table and 11 player stations didn't materially alter any of the terms that it had previously considered. Of course, if there had been a challenge in 2017, we might have a more thorough record of what was going on then, but that isn't what was at stake before the commission in 2023.
What if there has been an evolution in the technology and the different devices that are used? Wouldn't that necessarily suggest that the it's not an apples-to-apples treatment before the amendment and after the amendment that we're talking. What we're talking about after the amendment is new from the ground up and subject to our review.
And I would defer to Mr. Nelson on the details of the technology that was in place before and after the floor plan at issue here. It's my understanding that there was not that sort of advance or change in technology between the floor plan that had and that was approved in October of 2023.
So just so I'm clear on it, the commission's understanding in making its decision is that the technology was the same?
Yes.
And the commission believed that these contraptions were equipment and not electronic gambling devices?
Well, I think that goes back to its approval of the technology in 2017 when the commission did decide that this wasn't a video game of chance because it involved a live dealer distributing the cards and it didn't rely on a random number generator. That's the Metro Harness case that the parties cite in the briefing. As far back as 2012, the technology of displaying cards on a flat screen as a way of playing the games was in place. And so the idea that simply displaying the cards that had been dealt by a live dealer somehow transformed the games into an electronic game of some sort is contrary to this court's decision in Metro Harness and shouldn't be grounds to reverse the commission's decision here.
Mr. Pesch, I asked Mr. Peterson, your opposing counsel, about the effect of prior decisions of the agency. To the extent to which Relator's challenge to the 2023 decision could implicate or affect prior decisions of the agency. In your brief, you make the argument starting at page 18 saying it's untimely. Clearly, it is timely with respect to the 2023 decision, right? The appeal.
That's our position, yes.
But not with respect to prior decisions. But so I guess, is there no case law in Minnesota about this issue? And I guess, in other words, if the 2023 decision assumes the legal propriety of certain operations, which was decided or at least assumed in prior decisions of the agency. So I'm just wondering what is the potential reach of this of an opinion by this court on that issue? I mean, would it be limited just to the additional tables that are being added, or would it necessarily affect the pre-existing tables, or in what circumstances might it? And I guess that's my question. And I guess my first question to you is, I'm sure you performed some legal research, a lot of legal research in preparing your brief. You didn't cite no party to the appeal has cited case law that satisfies my sort of interest in that subject. And I'm wondering if you can tell me the case law does not exist. And if it does not, I guess, can you give us any further guidance for how we might answer that question?
Oh, and I see I'm out of time.
You may certainly answer the question.
I didn't find in my legal research a case that directly spoke on this court's ability to offer a prospective ruling on an issue that would present some sort of concern as the relator brings here.
Indirectly? We'll take anything. We'll take breadcrumbs.
Well, Your Honor, I would point you back to the Mesabi Metallics case that this court decided this year, where it decided that the lack of redressable harm meant that the appeal should be dismissed. And I think our argument regarding whether or not it's even possible for this court to grant the relief requested falls within the confines of the
opinion. Well, that goes to standing, correct?
Correct, but
How does that address the question of the reach of this court's review as between the status quo before the amendment was approved and after? Does that case suggest an answer
I think the two are heavily related because this court acknowledged in the mining case that its inability to address the concern by reversing the agency decision was one of the reasons there was no standing, is because if this court were to grant what Relator is asking for, we would go back to the floor plan that was previously in place. And so because this court can't grant the relief requested, there isn't standing and there isn't very good case law on how this court might go about trying to grant the relief, because it shouldn't be granting it in the first place.
Now, I haven't reviewed that case specifically as to standing, because of course it comes up in the response brief or in the reply brief, but does that case address a situation where a party was invited to participate in the decision-making process?
Well, I don't think that the party needs to be invited to participate in the decision-making process.
No, I'm just wondering whether that case is analogous to this case in that regard.
No, each case addresses a situation where a party was not one of the parties directly seeking approval or granting approval, but wanted to intervene in the decision-making process. So,
but not one like this case that was invited through consultation to have discussions about the decision.
There was no statutory requirement to consult with the mining company before the
Thank you.
Decision.
All right, counsel for the other respondent, Running Aces.
I go the wrong way every time. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Evan Nelson from the Maslin firm here on behalf of Running Aces. I do want to focus my time on the kind of boots on the ground, what these card games actually look like when they're being played and how they operate. However, I do want to respond to Judge Ross's question on standing, and specifically under the consultation statute, I'd point the court's attention to subdivision 4 of 1065, which says, and I'm reading now, "This section is not intended to and does not create any right to administrative or judicial review or any other right, benefit, or responsibility, substantive or procedural, enforceable against the state of Minnesota." So consultation, while important and good, does not confer standing because the legislature said it does not confer standing. It's not a basis that the APA applies. It's not a basis this court can review. So for that reason, the standing doesn't apply. And the court also was questioning the notion that the fact they're competitors gives them standing. This is where the latches argument comes in. I think that it's really important to note that—
By the way, is Running Aces harmed by the activity of the community, the gambling activity?
In this case, no. I don't believe that Running Aces is harmed by this—
By the overlap?
By the overlap. This is they're competitors. And their opposing counsel referenced some other case that's not before this court, and so that's not something to consider. But these are competitors in the gambling industry, and they are the assumption that
in the case that was referenced, did Running Aces indicate that there was harm to Running Aces?
I'm not counsel in that case, so I can't speak to that case.
If it turns out that that's the circumstance, would that be relevant to whether there is standing?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the notion of standing based upon mere competition assumes it's a zero-sum market. If someone goes to Running Aces, that means that person isn't going to Mystic Lake or any other tribal casino. First of all, there's no factual evidence of that in the record. There's no submission to say what market studies have done or that we're losing game slots because somebody else has them. That hasn't been done. As Your Honor said, it's a speculative standing issue. And again, because they are competitors and because they are using this process to try to take away from a competitor, we should be very mindful. And that's where latches comes in. Because clearly Running Aces will be prejudiced if this is taken away. We've had 6 years of these games. We've had reasonable reliance on the fact these games are lawful and are approved. And for the community, a competitor to come in with no excuse for its delay, for no excuse for not challenging this in 2017, and to come in now should be barred by the doctrine of latches.
Is the technology the same before and after the amendment that we're talking about, or have, I'm assuming, I could be wrong, but as technology goes, usually there's advancements, modifications, changes. Have there been changes? And if so, why wouldn't all of the apparatus that's being challenged be on the table?
The technology has not substantively changed, and I'm not trying to hedge, but of course there's going to be better cameras, there's going to be better video screens and all that, but the substance of the games, which actually is in the record as the operating procedures set forth the rules and how these games works, that's been unchanged. That's been the case since 2017. And those operating procedures demonstrate that these are card games. These are actual card games. The outcome of wagers is based upon the flip of a card, an actual card, actually flipped by a dealer who is interacting with the people playing the games. And I just want to say something quickly, and I'll reference the court to pages 75 and 76 of the record. The community's position that these are nominal dealers is offensive to what these people are actually doing. Pages 75 and 76 has a job description, and I'm again reading from this, or at least paraphrasing. These dealers are educating guests on how to play the game, interacting with players that play the game. They're monitoring the game as it's going on. They're working with these, not working with, but interacting with these patrons. In fact, the patrons can give a tip to the dealer. Why would you tip someone who you're not interacting with? Why would you tip someone who's just an automaton simply flipping over computerly randomly generated cards? That is not the case. These are actual card games. This court's decision in North Metro, which was regarding video blackjack, which we are not doing video blackjack and we are not doing video poker, came down to the finding that gambling devices were gambling devices because they were automatic. There was a random number generator, and you just plopped your quarter in, you played the game, and then the random number generator automatically determined how you'd win. There is nothing automatic about these card games. I'm sorry, Your Honor, you have a question?
So just on the way these work, it's always seemed to me like for blackjack and probably for poker and a lot of other games, a big part of it is the social interaction between the players. It wouldn't seem like you have any of that in this particular form. Is that a fair statement?
Your Honor, I understand this isn't in the record, but I was just there last week, and you and I are closer, are the same distance as the dealer and the players, and their players are just as close as Mr. Pesch, Mr. Peterson, and I. It's not as if these are scattered all over the floor and only connecting through the computer. There is interaction people can say, hey, good hit. People can say, great job. All that kind of camaraderie and fun that comes from what you might think of when you play blackjack at a table with seven chairs, five chairs, how many of our chairs there are.
So how many can play on your system? Is it limited to seven?
Yes, it is limited by the floor plan, Your Honor. The dealer table, which then interacts with the player terminals, that is one table in the same way that a dealer dealing on a felt table is interacting with and playing with the people who are at that table. That's the unit. The game is the unit. We're not talking about tables in the dictionary sense. We're talking about tables used for card playing, so an industry-specific table. That's the unit.
So the single dealer distributes the cards to all the players. And am I correct that that dealer, when there's a hit, it applies to all of the tables simultaneously?
In blackjack, the dealer, and I might run out of time, so can I answer your question? The dealer deals cards as you would expect in blackjack, and then there are community cards, and then if any of the table players hits, the dealer will flip over the next card. And then if anybody else hits, the dealer flips over the next card.
And that hit applies to all of the players,
right,
or just the one player?
It's a community hit, so it applies to all the players in the same way that Texas Hold'em has the community cards, and everyone's playing, making poker hands off of the community cards.
Is that differentiate? I mean, I have limited experience with blackjack, but doesn't that that differentiates the game with an actual dealer playing at a table with physically playing at a table with individuals? Yes or no?
No, Your Honor, it does not.
Are there community hits in when you have a table?
There could be. There's no reason why there couldn't be. It's the game is a card game because it uses cards and the wagers are determined on the flip of a card. The rules of the game, which by the way are approved and are in the record, indicate that for what the community has deemed traditional blackjack, everyone gets their own hits. But in dealer assist, there's community cards that are being played. It's the same thing in Baccarat. People are betting on community cards. There's a dealer hand and a bank hand. The whole community plays with that. It's the same thing in the three-card poker games, which are not poker in the sense you think of them. They're deemed poker carnival games in the industry. Everyone's playing community cards. Everyone's making wagers on community cards, whether it's through an interface on a computer screen or whether there's no computer screen there, it's still a card game.
Thank you.
I have one more technology question, which may or may not be legally relevant, but I'm just trying to visualize. So the player sees, I mean, I guess you say, I think that the it's based on cards actually dealt by the dealer. I'm wondering, I mean, is it a, does the player see on his or her screen an actual, like, visual image of that card? So in other words, like, if somebody held a finger over the card or if a mosquito landed on the card, I mean, would that be visible to the player on the player's screen? Or does the computer system generate sort of like a reproduction of the card that was dealt by the dealer, which was, you know, read by some optical scanner? If you understand my question.
I do.
Yeah.
And may I, Your Honor?
Yeah, please.
The Interblock games have a shoe that deals all the cards out. It passes across a camera, and then the actual card is then broadcast to the player terminal. There's also a camera above, which is at the player terminal, that shows the kind of overview, like think ESPN playing poker, overview of the cards. That's also on the screen.
So what's displayed at the player's terminal is a video of the card, or is it, to go to Judge Johnson's question, or is it a digitally reproduced, like, caricature of a card or cartoon image of the card?
It's actually both, Your Honor. There is the representation, the broadcast, whatever you want to call it, of the actual card, and then there's also the bird's eye view overview showing the entire table and the entire game. But again, actual cards, people are making decisions, interacting with the dealer, playing actual cards.
And seeing the other players' cards clearly.
Yes. Yeah, the entire game is being played by how many of the people are playing.
And what, do they sign up by number so that number one would be the person to the left, in theory, of the dealer in a real game? But
For video blackjack, there's three hands that are dealt to the players and then one hand to the dealer. And Judge Kirk, you can bet on one, two, three, none, or all, whatever you want to bet on for those three hands. And then you decide, I want to take a hit. I'm going to stand on hand one. I'll take a hit on can two, or whatever else it is. And Judge Ross would have the same decisions.
Can you double down if you get two aces, for instance?
You may. That's a split, but yes, you can. Traditional blackjack things you can do.
You could actually play six hands at a time, in theory.
Well, there's only three hands that are dealt out, so you're playing three hands.
Yeah, but if you double down on each of them.
Oh, I see your point, and yes, you could. All of those rules are in the record if you're curious about them, but yeah, all the betting mechanisms that are in the games as they're played without dealer assist are also in the games as they play them on dealer assist.
And what you've just described was previously approved, not just in the 2023 amendment process.
Correct. I mean, these operating plans are dated from 2017.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for relator, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
May it please the court, Josh Peterson on behalf of the Shakopee community. I want to address the changes from 2017 to 2023, and the court can see those changes on pages, I believe it's MRC 0000, so four zeros, and 12 through 22 or thereabouts. You can see the application, the original application, from Running Aces for these games. They represented in that application that this game was just like traditional blackjack, that there were only going to be seven chairs, and they were going to be surrounding the table. So you can even see a diagram in there where it's a table, and if you looked at it, it looks just like the other blackjack tables. So this idea that the community should be barred by the doctrine of latches because the original representation somehow disclosed that eventually this game would morph from a game with a dealer table and seven player tables right around it into four dealer tables and clusters of three, four people sitting at their individual video games of chance player tables is meritless. This idea also that you can always see the dealer and you have to interact with the dealer is false. The court can see the plan of operation, particularly the poker game, which we kind of skip a lot because the blackjack game has the three community cards. The poker game is a dealer who literally just takes five cards at a time, flops them down, and does it every 10 seconds. And you just sit there and pick which cards you want to hold, just like you would at video poker, if you sat at like a counter video poker game, exact same concept. You're playing against a play table. I'm going to keep cards 1, 2, and 3. The next time that the dealer deals after that, I get the cards that are in positions 1, 2, and 3. We call it a nominal dealer because the dealer's only job is to follow the prompts that show up on the screen after it's been automatically shuffled for that dealer, and they just deal cards in a line. So blackjack looks nothing like blackjack, to Judge Kirk's question. There aren't seven hands. There's community hands. The dealer deals the three community hands, and you play off of those hands, and then the dealer just deals additional cards in a line. That's not like traditional blackjack, and the rules for traditional blackjack, according to Running Aces, is in the plan of operation. So you can compare the differences. This is a simulation of blackjack. It's an enhancement, and it's really, again, it goes back to...
Are these the rules that were approved, not in 2023, but previously?
Actually, Your Honor, it's not in the record what was approved. I believe that the plan of operation in the record is only the amended plan of operation. What was approved, however, in 2017 with regard to the electronic table games was this single hand, not community hand, not three hands per player. That happened when the commission enforced the unpromulgated rule and sort of just did by private letter, okay, this is approved, this is approved, this is approved. Again, goes back to the latches issue. How is the community supposed to know that there were additions of all these different new player tables and player seats to the point that it goes from a game that really, if you look at the diagram, it looks like traditional blackjack. It's not like you can even see the video screens on that diagram, into what we now see in the plan of operation where you've got four dealer tables and clusters of these video tables.
Were there iterations between 2017 and 2023?
There were, but those were approved by the letter from the commission to Running Aces. There's not this contested issue here where you've got...
That was in 2018, I think.
Correct.
Was there another iteration that was approved by the full commission?
Not that's in the record, not that I'm aware. The only one that's in the record, I believe, is another 2018 approval. We know, though, that Canterbury Park also had this approved because the plan of operations says that any game that's approved for one of the card clubs is approved for all of them, going back again to our unpromulgated rule argument. So the commission decided the electronic table games were not video games of chance and could be operated, at least in the way that they looked in 2017, and then it applied that rule again to Running Aces over the years to allow them to expand what they were offering and allowed Canterbury Park to do the same without submitting some separate application.
Before the 2023 action, did Running Aces have player stations, terminals, whatever, tables, if you wish, that were disconnected from the dealer tables?
I believe so.
And, I mean, I've seen photographs in the record or in the briefs of the iTable, I think, which was from a prior era, and those were built into a single blackjack table, as I recall.
That's right, and there's actually only six chairs. So,
and then at a later
like
time, I think, if I remember correctly, there might have been some electronic technology where with seven players sharing a table with the dealer, or no?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Okay. So, okay. Thank you.
Looks like there are no further questions, and the time has expired. I suspect if we had 4 hours of argument, we would fill the time. thank you for your argument and for your written submissions and for the oral argument today. Very helpful. Difficult case. We'll take it under advisement, issue our opinion within the statutory period. The case is submitted. Thank you. Have a good afternoon.